All right, thank you and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. We're waiting on our CellSportTalk.com co-host, Karen Lyle, and we have a guest scheduled as well. So we'll throw that in if we can. I just want to see what the fallback is from MLB on the comments from the mayor now. But what this does, in effect, it doesn't change anything. And, a teachers union is suing. Who cares? It doesn't matter. Big money will always trump that stuff. You know, it's interesting, too. It's like when you go to Vegas, and I remember being at the Encore a few years ago, and I looked down, and there was this huge square in the ground. And you could tell a building used to be there, and it had been demolished. And I thought, what casino didn't make it in Vegas? And it turned out, they go, well, that was the Trump Tower. I went, really? They completely razed it? They razed it with a Z. But I think with this, nothing is going to change. All right. We do have one of our guests, Rick Tittle, with you, coast to coast, for CellSportTalk.com in this segment. And we have Gordon Linden. Gordon Linden is an architect and urban and regional planner. And as interesting, Gordon, how does this sort of dovetail into the sailing world, please?
Well, I was trying to come up with something clever to say, and the best one I came up with is the news that out of Paris that the opening ceremonies will be conducted on the River Seine, that the typical stadium march of the athletes is going to be done on boats and barges down the Seine. And this opens up, to my mind, a complete new world of the experience of opening the Olympics. And historically, this was done at the 1974 Spokane, Washington World's Fair. Tiny little Spokane had all of the countries, the participating countries, came on the river on barges. And it was a very spectacular opening to the event. But beyond that, water is an important feature of many expos and the waterfront, entertainment around it, arriving, another way to get to the expo. And next year's expo in Osaka will be, 2025, will be on a man-made island, not unlike the Treasure Island situation, which is where I'll be speaking on Saturday. But it's... sport and events are, of course, linked, and the expos actually aspire to be the intellectual equivalent of the Olympics, largest non-sports spectator event in the world, which varies according to the different venues around the world they've been held in. So there's a lot of crossover, but there's big differences, and of course we can explore those if you wish, but. Anyway, excited about Paris.
Yeah, I can imagine the scenes going down on the Bateau Mouche and the Ile de France and the Eiffel Tower and Notre Dame. It's going to be really, really cool. And I understand, Karen Lyle, you're with us now.
I am, actually. I was talking to Gordon before, but we let him connect first, and here I am.
All right, go for it.
So, Gordon, I have a question for you. You are having an opportunity to speak at the Treasure Island Museum, just close to the anniversary celebration, which will be on February 18th, for the World's Fair, which was actually the Golden Gate International Exposition there. Is there something that you can tell us that relates to the water or the building of that island that you'll be talking about in your lecture?
Yeah, well, actually, the focus of this presentation is to answer the question, whatever happened to World's Fairs? And I've gotten that question mostly in the United States. What happened was San Francisco had three expos, one in 1893, then 1915 was the one at the Palace of Fine Arts. That was the celebration of the completion of the Panama Canal and also the reawakening or the rebirth from the earthquake 1939 celebrated the Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge. And so here we are these many years later. Expos actually went on from 39, 40 to, there was a hiatus during the war, World War II, but then Brussels came back with 1958, which the Atomium, which a lot of people have seen, and some people have been there. It's beautiful if you have a chance to see it. So then there were many expos in the United States. Seattle had 62. Then we had New York, 64, 65. So it went on until 1984, and that was the end of the U.S. Expos. And so then it went on around the world. The U.S. has been a participant at many expos. They were not an active member of the Bureau of International Expositions, which is the treaty organization, which all the now more than 170 member nations belong to. So, but the U.S. has rejoined, and there was a congressional commitment for $30 million to build a pavilion in Osaka. So we're back in the game, trying. There are other cities in the United States that have been looking at this. We've done studies for many cities, and I think there's a new wind blowing. But the question about San Francisco is really, what about the energy that brought those expos to happen in San Francisco those years in the past? What does that speak to the present and the future? And that's where I find the exciting part of things with expos is like a lot of things, there's change in the air, and how could San Francisco position itself to do something which might be innovative, different. Certainly San Francisco is well known. A lot of cities that we've worked with, and I won't name them just off the top of my head, because the point is that they're not well known, and they, even an expo didn't really change their profile, although some people say that it does. But San Francisco is a well-known destination. It's one that's all over the postcards and TVs of the world. Whenever they talk about the United States, they talk about the most international city is San Francisco. And so we've got a lot of things going here. What we do have is also a thing that promotes some expos is a problem. And the problem, if we can put it that way, is transportation. And there's been talk from time to time about another BART tunnel, about another bridge, about ferry boats like Seattle has lots and lots of ferry boats. So which one of those approaches would San Francisco take to, in the shorter term, be able to say we've got something cooking? The idea might be of an aerial tramway system. These would give you views that would be unprecedented. There's a tramway in New York from Roosevelt Island to Manhattan. And I know people talk about that one. But San Francisco, if you can imagine going from Treasure Island back to the city along the edge of the bridge there, looking out across the bridge, that would be spectacular. And it's something that could be done a lot faster than building tubes and the expense and all that. So the idea of embracing the problem with something innovative, it might be the way to spearhead a campaign to get San Francisco back in the expo business.
I remember reading in that great book by Eric Larson called Thunderstruck about the Centennial Exhibition 1876 in Philadelphia, and way, way in the back where no one was this young guy named Alexander Graham Bell, and he had this telephone thing and no one was looking at it, and he was literally packing it up when I think it was the ambassador from Portugal was like, wait, let me see what this thing is. And that's where the telephone was invented. So you never know what you're going to get at these expos.
Right. Well, and this is a hotbed. San Francisco Bay Area is a hotbed for that. So let's put some of that brain power to work and make it happen. But it's one of those things that's kind of latent, and maybe the timing is such that people would look into another approach to expos. And the one that we've been looking into is the network that the International Sister Cities organization has, and they connect. You may be familiar with that name, and they've been around quite a while. Yeah, they've been around for quite a while. We've been working with them recently on the idea of a distributed World's Fair, meaning using the network that they have of cities, San Francisco and Osaka, our sister cities, for example. Use that network to enhance and expand the participation of cities to an expo. So some of those cities could come to San Francisco, take up space at the Palace of Fine Arts, for example, or other venues that we have in San Francisco, Moscone, whatever. But we could also have distributed events so that you could be standing in the Palace of Fine Arts and look up at a screen and see, it's morning in Sydney. Hello, good day. So you could have a real international experience that heretofore has only been individuals, of course, experiences, but as a collective, it could be an interesting innovation.
Karen, just about a minute, time for one more question.
It seems that from the dust of the creators of the past, which is what we have on Treasure Island, that it's possible to inspire new art and new sculptures and new collaborations. And what you describe really sounds exciting because it brings in space and technology. What would be your hope for Treasure Island in a few sentences or so?
Well, Treasure Island, if you look at the current development plan, there's quite a lot of open space, but there's also a lot of new housing there. So it's going to be a separate city. And there's been a lot of experience with the launch of new cities. And I think that could coincide with, I'm not putting it into marketing terms, but hey, we're here. This is our new city. This is a new town in town, they were called at one point. So Treasure Island can definitely play that role. And I think a new birth of the city in a lot of ways could be the focus.
There he is, Gordon Linden. Very interesting, Gordon. Thanks for your time. We really appreciate the insights as well.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, Karen. And thanks for coming by. Well, let's do it again next week.
We will see you next Tuesday.
Everybody check out salesportstalk.com for more on the topic. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Byline.